Here on Life Matters, we've been reflecting lately on the personal over the past few weeks and exploring our country's relationship with its Indigenous past and future through the bonds formed between people. Richard Seddon and Bianca Barling Seddon first met when they were both living and working in Arnhem Land, and this is the story of their relationship.
Hi, I'm Richard Seddon. I have family connections to the Torres Strait and Cape York through the Wutati clan and Kanju. My mum and dad were both born on Thursday Island. My mum worked in a prawn farm up in the islands and in the territory, and my dad was a grader driver, making roads from Queensland all the way through up to the Northern Territory. I usually remember my mum as just staying home and making sure we were okay, always dressed for school, had lunches packed, and coming home to her after school, and house would be clean, like more of home duties. I remember as a child driving in, you know, the old station wagon, and I may have been the youngest then, and my other older siblings would travel through central Queensland and all these little towns where my dad would find work. As my dad tells me that story, he tells me that we were heading south, but the roads were flooded. We were stuck in central Queensland somewhere, and he decided to take the road up north. And we end up actually living longer and became Territorians, I suppose.
It's Bianca Barling Seddon here. I live at Pebbly Beach in far north Queensland. So I was born in Subiaco in Western Australia, and we moved around a bit, but the place I grew up mostly was in Robe in southeast Australia, which is like a small, well, it was a small fishing village, and now it's quite a major tourist town. My mum and dad met in the 70s, and quickly became pregnant with twins. They had a quickie wedding, and I think it was hard for them both. They were both using a lot of drugs and weren't really ready for having kids. I think my dad was 18, mum was 16. Yeah, they found it really hard and they broke up. It was a prolonged kind of agonising breakup for both of them because they didn't have probably the emotional maturity to deal with something quite complex. And then they became very different people, and you could see why they weren't probably suited. My dad was very politically active, and my mum was very creative and after, I guess, a different life.
Well, we had a heap of extended family growing up in Thursday Island as a young infant. Our culture, I think, was mainly taught by listening and seeing. Dad or uncle's auntie would explain what was happening in front of us. We always celebrated unveiling of a tombstone after a family member or relation, close relation, would pass away. A year or two later on, they'd get a headstone made up and then have a celebration of that person's life, and that would put them to rest and at ease once the tombstone was unveiled, and it was like a big coming celebration of that person's life. And that's how I suppose I learned, just watching and learning and listening.
Dad was a proper hippie, I guess you'd say. He was kind of anti-capitalism, very much for looking after the environment, was active in the land rights scene, and essentially just kind of moved from place to place, going from protest to protest. I learnt about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture, I guess, firsthand through friends of my dad's or through some of the protests. I kind of vaguely remember when we were fairly young. I knew that what I was learning at school was different to what Australia's real history was. My sister and I, you know, we both knew about massacres and treatment of our first people. I knew that what we were learning at school wasn't the truth, but I didn't really understand why we weren't learning the truth. So I think before I was married to an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island man, I understood racism very politically and structurally. I knew I'd witnessed it in the workplace. I'd witnessed it amongst my own family growing up, and I sort of knew it to be this sort of really horrible, crackly thing that's really present. But what I hadn't really understood or considered is this really discreet, silent racism. The racism I see Richard experience, it's really pervasive, and it might be like going into a shop and they might not realise we're together or whatever, and the really different levels of customer service. Richard will be ignored, there won't be eye contact, or if we walk into a shop and we're together, they won't look at him and they'll just directly speak to me.
While growing up, I had lots of mates in a range of different cultures. So we grew up with the Greeks, the Chinese, the local Larrakia people up there. I knew there was racism around, but it never was sort of in our faces, but you could always feel it when walking into shops or supermarkets. You'd get looks, you'd get shouted at, and always had a lot of mates who were bigger and much bigger than me, so we didn't get much, so because I was the shortest bloke, so I had lots of good, bodyguards. I didn't really think nothing of it. Like, I knew it was there. I knew it wasn't good. I knew it wasn't healthy. But it was there.
I had started working really young, around 13. And then when I was 16, I'd been working in kitchens for quite a while. Signed up doing an apprenticeship, so I was a chef. And then I decided in my mid-20s, I think, that I'd go to art school, which is something I'd always wanted to do, and had quite a nice career. And then I ended up going to Thailand for a year to work as a visual arts coach on the Thailand-Burma border. And while I was over there, I remember my dad's longing to go to Arnhem Land, and I wasn't ready to return home back down south. While I was working in Yirrkala, I was working on a young women's program. We were taking them to women's football every week, and the coach turned out to be Richard. So I ended up dating the football coach, which was a great source of amusement to all my art friends.
Well, my impressions was she was beautiful and loved her the way she worked with these young Indigenous girls, women, very patient with them. They would feel her too, because she had, an aura about her, and really loved what she was doing.
It'd just been a very kind of easy, carefree relationship. We're very different, but we're also very similar. So we'd been, living in the community and dating for a while, and then I became pregnant with Marlo, which was a really lovely surprise that turned into something really amazing.
Well, my relationship with Bianca, I think since being with her, it's been more patient with growing up of Marlo, but there's also situations where I'm more laid back and she'd want to get things done quicker. I'll get them done, but later. It's just that, they seem to be in a hurry. I think I've learned a lot of things how to be a good dad, how to talk to Marlo and teach him without not trying to raise my voice, to be more calm and more patient with him, I think.
My culture is, I've tried to make sense of it over the years, how they're different. The way I've always worked and been is sort of go at breakneck speed to achieve the goal. It's been pretty fun, and it is still kind of the way I work, but I'm now much more mindful of that it's actually not just about what you get at the end, it's about the process, about the people you speak with along the way. The biggest thing in our relationship that I've learnt is how to spend time just being with someone and how to spend time being together as a family. That's not how I grew up and what I had modelled. So to learn it from a way that is from a, you know, kind person, but also someone that's a really strong part of their culture has, you know, it's really been quite therapeutic for me.
Since being in Cairns, I've been up to the Torres Strait once when Marlo was much younger, may have been 2 or 3 then, and my hope for my son Marlo would be one day moving up there to work and live and being able to show him the culture side of the Torres Straits, which I know he'd love, because at the moment he just can't help himself, but he loves the salt water.
And I guess we just want him growing up feeling loved, being healthy and really proud of his culture.
Just seeing the place, it's just the quietness, the nice blue clear waters, houses on the beach, little children swimming in the ocean, lots of dinghies, and you look at that and think, gee, I used to go out with Dad in those dinghies and we used to go hunting, fishing, camping over in the other islands. Just makes your heart sore.
That was Richard Seddon and his wife Bianca Barling Seddon reflecting on their relationship and their journey together. And our Walking Together series was produced by Kathy Pryor and the sound engineer was Carey Dell. You can hear the final episode in this series next week.